Okay, I'm recording again on a different machine, so that's why I'm on here twice. So again, this is the Learning Materials Working Group bi-weekly call. The Learning Materials Working Group is focused on developing open source training materials as licensed by Hyperledger to educate people interested in expanding their knowledge of Hyperledger and its projects. The working group will consult with other Hyperledger working groups, team members, and project maintainers to identify training needs and develop strategies, as well as materials to address those needs. So welcome everybody. I'm Bobby, and I'm going to read the antitrust policy next. The Linux Foundation meetings, let me just share my agenda screen for just a moment. The Linux Foundation meetings involve participation by industry competitors, and it is the intention of the Linux Foundation to conduct all of its activities in accordance with applicable antitrust and competition laws. It is therefore extremely important that attendees adhere to meeting agendas and be aware of and not participate in any activities that are prohibited under applicable U.S. state, federal, or foreign antitrust and competition laws. Examples of such types of actions are prohibited at the Linux Foundation meetings and in connection with the Linux Foundation activities are described in the Linux Foundation antitrust policy available at www.linuxfoundation.org/antitrust-policy. If you have any questions about these matters, please consult your company counsel, or if you're a member of the Linux Foundation, feel free to contact Andrew Updegrove of the firm of Geismar Updegrove LLP, which provides legal counsel for the Linux Foundation. So hi everybody, it is October 7th, and I'm trying to get to see who's on the call. If everybody would like to introduce themselves. Well, I think everybody just about knows each other. It's Flavia, Jim, ID's on the call. I don't see Kelly, and then somebody else I'm not sure, and I'm on there twice. So I know Flavia's here just for a little bit, so I'm gonna just jump real quick to the edX updates, which I think the last time we talked, Jim was going to do some checking on the technical course. Did you have any luck with that, Jim?
Well, I guess yes and no. So I did check, and the answer is there's nothing in progress at this point on the Hyperledger Fabric side. So I did take a look at that, and I did take a brief look at the EDX course that's out there for Sawtooth now. And basically there's nothing in progress to create something like that yet for Fabric, but I will say that there is material to build that for Fabric for sure. So one of the challenges right now for planning a Fabric course is we have a long-term stable release, which is 1.4x, and then we have a new release, which will be in a sense released in the fourth quarter, which practically doesn't mean anything, but I'll say maybe mid-year of next year, version 2, which is a different architectural release than 1.4x, will become, you know, will start to become in demand, if you will. You know what I mean? So if you were looking to say, I want to learn Fabric, 1.4x is the place to start right now. But you know, I'll guess mid-year next year, maybe that starts to shift to the 2.0 version. So if there's a course that's going to come out, I guess it could target 1.4x short term, and then sometime late next year would have to look at migrating, if that makes sense.
Just to keep in mind, edX courses, when they're out for about a year and a half each version. We can't really make, you know, fundamental updates, like significant updates to a version that's right. Already live. So I'm not sure if it makes sense to start working on a 1.4 version because it will take a little bit of time to put together the course, even though there are materials, you know, it does yep. take a while to make them, like give them flow and organize them into content, then put it in, you know, that content on edX and making it live. I would say probably would come out in January or who knows, at, you know, just a very rough estimate. But then, you know, if mid-year you're saying that 2.0 will like really start getting traction being used, then why not wait for now and, you know, start working towards mid-year on something on 2.0. And when we're seeing traction, to kind of be ready with that launch, to me, it makes more sense.
Yep. Yeah, actually, I agree with you. I think that does make sense. So anyway, that's why I threw out, in a sense, what's going on. But right. So right now, they're actually working on the documentation materials for 2.0. They're not at all ready, but I know they'll, in a sense, have the first cut of those materials done by mid-December of this year. And then you're right. Maybe starting in the new year, then it does make sense to say, okay, we've got the material, you know, the core raw material, and now we can look at generating a course. And I think, as you said, the Sawtooth course is, I'll call it, a simple enough model to say something on that level for Fabric and beyond version 2.0. And I will say, at least I have an inventory. I was actually building a Fabric course on 1.4x at a point. So I have, in a sense, you know, the typical quizzes that you have in EDX on a module, you know, as you finish the chapter, those chapter quizzes. I've done a bunch of those. None of those are going to be what I call perfect for 2.0. They'd all need to be revisited. But at least there's some quiz material as a starting point. And there's also certainly going to be, in December, I'll call it, a completed set of docs and sample applications available for 2.0 as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so I think it's really the best way to go, just because we don't want to waste time on doing something that, you know, in short term will no longer kind of be in use because something newer and better is coming out. So let's wait a little bit until everything is finalized, stabilized with Fabric documentation, and then, you know, start working on a Fabric for Developers course. I think that is the best way to go. The Sawtooth for Developers course, I think it's a good one. It was created by Bitwise initially on an older version of Sawtooth, and then updated by Intel on 1.2, I believe. So whatever the latest is, that's right. You know, and we put it out with the updates and some bugs that were fixed as well from the initial version, because it was originally created last year, but nobody told us it was out there to put it on edX. And when we finally got word, you know, we needed to update it, and then Intel stepped in. But, you know, something similar to that, I think it would be great. Yep. Focusing on pure technical, like hands-on course. Yep. So it's great that we already have a good model to follow. Obviously, whatever was created in the original Hyperledger MOOC course, that Tuna use case and all that, we don't need to reuse that or anything.
No, we don't. Yeah, because there's better stuff now, for sure.
Exactly. So, I mean, that's outdated. We can move on to newer, better stuff. So feel free to use whatever use case you want. The things don't, like the different projects, because they'll be standalone courses, they can use their own sample applications and use cases and everything. So they don't need to be, you know, on the same, like using the same thing. I can definitely tell you that we're working on two indie courses, well, a combination of indie areas and URSA. One will come out probably in November. It's going to be more of an intro to indie areas and URSA, and then a how to become a developer for indie and areas is coming out early next year in January or February, depending on how content development goes. Mm-hmm. And they're both created by Stephen Curran, so they're in the work. We just haven't made any announcement yet because we're needing some things finalized for the first course, but you know, things are moving ahead with different Hyperledger projects for sure.
Cool, sounds good. Thank you.
You're welcome. And then other than that, you know, for the blockchain for business, I mean, the current course that I've updated earlier this year in July, it's out there, it's doing well. Definitely the fact that we've removed the hands-on portion and now it's addressed only to a non-technical, more business-oriented audience has removed pretty much all issues that we've had, with forums and supporting learners and all that.
Right,
there's
right.
no activity pretty much whatsoever in the forum, which is good because that means everything that's now in the course is clear. It's, you know, for one type of audience, so there's no room for misunderstanding or not having the right skills, prerequisites for, you know, understanding and taking the course and completing it successfully. We are planning to update a little bit the other blockchain course that was created in collaboration with BTA, the blockchain understanding its uses and implications, I believe it's the...
Right, that's right. Yeah.
Which is the second course in the professional certificate. I want to remove a few videos of two guys that, you know, I think ruin the flow and the consistency of the course that were thrown in there by BTA. I'll basically redo all of that content in the next couple of months. So at some point, I would say in January, I will ask this group to review what I've done in terms of, you know, technical accuracy, content accuracy. I'll replace those videos with text. So it's going to be pretty easy to review, mm-hmm. and it shouldn't be a lot. It's just a few sections here and there to actually provide information and not just fool around in the videos. So, and then it's scheduled to go live in February.
Yep. Sounds good. Excellent.
If I have it ready before, then I'll let you know. But as of right now, it's early January. So we'll see. Other than that, on my end, you know, that's kind of it for now. There's a lot going on, obviously, on a lot of fronts with the LF. In terms of Hyperledger, we are starting to work on a Hyperledger for Fabric developers, or Hyperledger Fabric for developers, which will be kind of like the prep course for the upcoming CHFD, I think, exam, the Fabric for Developer exam. But, you know, it's kind of unrelated to this group. I'm just letting you know to be in the loop of what's going on with Hyperledger.
That Hyperledger for Developers course that you're working on, mm-hmm. That's the Fabric version of that. When do you have a target date yet for that, when it's going to be actually available?
Right now we're looking at January.
Okay.
So, you know, we're kind of trying to come out either a little bit before the exam comes out or right around the same time. We finally, found the team to write the content and develop the labs. Mm-hmm. And we're starting to actively work on it. Well, content development is starting. And then my role comes in, basically kicks in later in December when it's time to develop the actual e-learning course.
Yep.
But things are starting to move ahead on that front for sure.
Good.
Well, again, Fabia, anytime the group can help you edit anything or, you know, even check links on anything, we're always available for you.
Sounds good. And I really appreciate that. You know, it does help a lot knowing that you're there and you've helped us in the past. So, you know, thank you so much for the support that we're having.
No, no worries. And hopefully we'll see you in 2 weeks with some more updates.
2 weeks, hopefully. I can't promise anything just because my schedule is crazy and I had a lot of meetings that were overlapping with this one that took priority, unfortunately. But, you know, I am doing my best to join the calls whenever possible. If not, you know, you can always reach me via email with no problem. I'm more than happy to follow up via email.
Great. Thank you again.
Thanks a lot. And keep it up. You're doing a great job for sure.
Oh, thank you. Okay, so back to the agenda. So basically that was the edX updates. So the blockchain for businesses out there without the examples for the different projects. It doesn't seem to need that much support. And that was, I guess, the goal of pulling those technical parts out. And the technical courses are trying to be updated and, you know, get information as that happens. Closer to January, it seems like we might be busy. Now the GitHub updates were coming from Kelly and from Ravi, and I don't see them on the call today. So I'll just go over quickly what we're looking for from that. I'm going to try to do everything from here. So let's see. And now my computer's working on this. So basically all we have, we're not really sure how we're as a group supposed to be maintaining these. And Kelly and Robbie were going to do some research for us. And they were sending back some emails back and forth. So I'm not really sure where they got on it. But basically, the Hyperledger resource here is very outdated. As you can see, the README hasn't been updated in 2 years. You know, just some things have been added in the last month, but no big changes or anything. And we want to know how we can support this as well. So I guess in 2 weeks we'll get a report on that from them. Let's see. Does anybody have any questions about the GitHub stuff? No? Okay, hopefully again we'll get some kind of report next week. So I just want to go over a few pages.
Hi, Bob. Sorry to interrupt.
Oh, no worries. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. So I was thinking, what exactly needs to be done concerning the GitHub? Because if what we need to do is mirror, let me ask the question, is the requirement to mirror on GitHub a repository that exists somewhere? Or will we have to manually prune this repository from time to time? Because it looks like it's manual repetitive work, but I'm aware that there are tools that can automate that kind of thing.
When I first joined this working group, it was about a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, and they had just gotten started. And one of their first assignments, so to speak, was putting the edX course into this GitHub repository so that everybody could find it. And we were working on that. We had, if you go back to our page, you can see we had some tutorials on how to get people started on helping out. And everything went well. And then the person who was our technical point person at the Linux Foundation left, and they never assigned anyone else. So now the new course is out there, but it hasn't been updated on GitHub. So that's why I sent Kelly and Ravi to try to figure out if in fact we even need to do this anymore, or if we're behind, like what the situation is. So again, I have no input other than we used to maintain this, and I think we should do it again, but I'm not really sure where the information flow or the workflow for this is going to happen in relationship with the Hyperledger people.
Okay. So to kind of give you a little bit of, sorry to jump in, to kind of give you a little bit of even deeper or, you know, long background right from the origins of it, the GitHub repository that you see there was actually started with this idea in mind that the content for the Hyperledger book would be in GitHub, and anyone wanting to contribute to it, you know, would be able to do so. And then whatever changes would be put out there would be then transferred into edX. It was a good idea, but because of a lot of technical issues that we encountered, it was basically work started and then it was dropped. At this point in time, I honestly don't know, or I don't think it's needed to use it with the original purpose in mind, to have the content from the course in GitHub, unless somebody is willing to, you know, put those updates in, because I honestly don't have the time to move, you know, whatever I updated in the course back into GitHub. And it's easier for me to just work directly in edX, as I've done with this latest update, and with what I'll do next year when the time comes again to update the course.
Okay.
Now, if you want to use this GitHub repository for other projects, for this group, it is a great resource, you know, and collaboration tool for sure. But I'm not sure, and I don't, me personally, okay, I don't think the course itself is a good use anymore. It's just for other projects and other training materials that you want to put forward and open them for collaboration for the entire group.
Okay, so thank you. That was very insightful. So this is what was going on in my brain. The programmer part of my brain, or the former programmer part of my brain, was thinking about, you know, finding some kind of tool or script that can set one of either this or the edX repository as a source and the other one as a mirror, whichever way, you know. So it's one of that. It's either someone invests in that one-time effort to create an automatic sync or mirror script, or we just replicate, we allow this to kind of, you know, fizzle out.
Because it depends on what you're using it for, because if it's used for content that is later on put, for example, into an e-learning course, like the ones on edX, you cannot, there's no way to automate or to create scripts to automate, you know, for the content that's put in GitHub to be put into edX. It has to be manually done by me or my colleague into edX, so taken from GitHub and put into edX, because the workflows are completely different. So automation cannot be done in this particular instance. If you're looking to create, for example, a repository with different training materials and tutorials and, you know, that are helpful for the group and for the community, Hyperledger community in general, you can definitely use the GitHub tool, this repository, expand it, clean it up and expand it, and then link it, you know, to the pages that where this group has access to, like, you know, in the wiki or somewhere. For that particular use case, I definitely see, you know, the point of keeping the GitHub repository. Because it is an official Hyperledger repository, it is, you know, it was created by the Hyperledger members, and it is under the Hyperledger group. You know, it makes sense to use it if you find it useful, but not, you know, not for courses in terms of automating or anything like that, because the workflow is completely different. If you do want to use it for particular courses or content that is later on transferred to e-learning, we can find workflows, you know, where you create the content there and then I take it from there and put it into edX or other, you know, platforms, and then we would find a workflow for whenever updates are made to the original content for me to be notified and then take them, you know, and move them into the whatever it's live on a different platform. That can definitely be done. But for courses where somebody else other than this group maintains content, like the Hyperledger group, it doesn't make sense. Like whatever I maintain and update, I don't see the point in keeping it here as well, you know.
Yeah, the only question remains, I guess, because we were starting to use the wiki so much,
mm-hmm,
for collaboration, and even when we did the edits on the business course, the wiki seemed to work so well. We started building the resource library, and basically what that is links to the individual projects' GitHub pages that they're producing. So instead of us redoing anything, we're just linking to the individual projects. So they might need help with their individual pages, but we're just basically, as the materials working group, just trying to gather all those links, if that makes sense. Yeah, and then the GitHub, again, we haven't really been doing anything with it for over a year and a half, so I'm not, again, ready to activate something if it's just repetitive and needs always to be updated and nobody's really using it. So that's, you know, we'll put that on hold and see what Kelly has to say next weekend or next in 2 weeks. Again, thank you everybody for that. Anybody have any more discussions on the GitHub stuff? Nope. Okay, then I'm going to move just on to a little bit of explaining the wiki page again and see what projects are out there for people to grab. So the first thing I'm going to go is to the task member signup sheet. And that's right in the index on the left-hand side. Again, this shows just some of the things that are open for people to work on. And again, I've put, we'll go over the use case and where we stand in that in a few minutes and the key terms and the individual things that are open and also the charting software to discuss. But again, if you want to work on any of these things that say open, just put your name on it and just jump in. You don't need to ask. You don't need to, you know, work first and then bring it to us and throw it on the agenda and everybody's happy for some new information. So does anybody have any questions about how to sign up for that? Again, I see a number on the call I'm not used to. If you need to learn how, our new member welcome page has instructions, which we'll touch on in a second. So then back to after the task member signup sheet, one of the first things that is on there, I think we're going to talk about use cases in a minute, but first we're just going to go over the surveys. The surveys are on hold again. We haven't had any information from Subtarshi and he couldn't make the call today. He was going to check with the DCI working group to find out if our questions can be added to their survey for the, all the projects and the interest groups, because they're already working on a community-wide survey. And he does not have a report on that, but I am sending out our group survey, which is probably right here, which will just go out to all the group members, just getting an idea of where we stand, how we can get more people involved, and letting them know that we're interested in, you know, getting some new life and some new members. So that survey is up for, I think that's the link to edit it if anybody wants to just look at it. I'm probably going to send it out by Wednesday. So if there's anything on here you want to edit, just go ahead and edit it. If not, you'll probably be seeing it by Wednesday. So again, that's our internal group survey. Our external group surveys that we wanted to do for the projects and for the special interest groups, we're hoping will just get included in the other survey. So does anybody have any questions on that? Nope. Okay, then the resource page again to update everybody what that is. Basically, we are collecting, trying to get all the user guides. I just got an email the other day that this was out there. I haven't even gone over it, but it's something new from BASU, so I thought I'd grab it and put it on here. Again, if you come on any emails that someone of the projects put out some user documentation or presentations, this is a great storage place for those. They have white papers, getting started guide, user guides. I'm working on the graphic sets. There's webinars. So we want this to be filled so that it's the one place people can go. Maybe it'll be a bigger index page somewhere down the road, but for all the documentation in one location. So if you know of any documentation, or if you just want to go over this, again, it's a task member sign up on our sign up to update the resource library. Does anybody have any questions about the resource library? Nope. Okay, moving right along after the resource, the graphics library is what I'm working on. Again, there's the in Hyperledger, they have a Google Drive page that is very, very file intense. You have to dig down really deep just to get a couple of the graphics. So I started going through that and grabbing some different graphics for each of the projects, and I will finish working on that this week. So again, that this will be one place that if you're just doing a quick, you just need some basic guideline logos and hints on how to do the PowerPoints, this is where you would go. Does anybody have any questions about that? Nope. And if you see on the agenda, it kind of goes hand in hand with, back to the agenda real quick. So up here, you have the actual resources. So these will be the use cases, these will be the actual key terms, and this will actually be the graphics library. Down here, you kind of have the same things, but these are more building the standards for the graphic sets and the standards for a use case. How do you build a use case? What are your topics in a use case? What are your topics in a white paper? So all that stuff goes under best practices, whereas in the resource page, it's actually product of those best practices. So again, the graphics library would be the product of all the graphics standards that are out there. And again, the graphics standards would be how to make a PowerPoint presentation, you know, how to do your indents, what do your color slides look like, and examples of the color slides. And then same thing with key terms, we're working on that as a resource. So that's an end product. What we're trying to do is get a consistent glossary for the community. We're going to try to, I guess what we proposed to the technical steering committee is to put each one of these on a wiki page and have everyone get input on it and get an idea of what they want it to look like. And then the technical steering committee would approve the glossary when it's finished. But again, we really don't have anybody working on this, creating a page for each term or working on any of the terms yet. Hopefully that's something that will get somebody to work on this fall. If anybody wants to volunteer to work on that, please let me know. Just jump in, start working on it. Any questions about the key terms? Nope. Okay, then I guess the next agenda item is the use cases. And ID, were you working on those?
Hi, Bobby.
Hi.
So yes, I did make two updates in this cycle. One of them from a Nigerian, a local, I'm based in Nigeria, and there's a local Oracle partner that has built something on the Oracle Hyperledger instance. The other one is from some Alexander, gentleman that I met on another Hyperledger Rocket Chat group, who mentioned that he needed help with showcasing his project. Apparently, it's something focused on bringing transparency to the transactions that go on between the patients who sign up for clinical trials and everybody else who's interested in those interactions. So those are the two new use cases that we've added to the use case library in the past 2 weeks.
I really like how you put them with the topic and then the project or the, you know, industry topic project. I think that's kind of one of the, for when we're doing these use cases to describe them, that's a great way to index them.
Okay.
Great, so thank you.
Okay.
Does anybody have any more conversations on use cases? Nope. Then we're gonna move to best practices. So again, just like we have the product, we have to figure out what the best practices look like. And again, these are open for development. Right now, the white paper is pretty solid. The use case standards pretty much in there well. We're getting the presentation standards guidelines. There's a few presentations on how to create presentations and what you need for that. And I know that we were looking into the different charting programs to figure out, like for white papers, which one as a group we recommend. And I was wondering, Jim, did you get anywhere on that?
I did take a look at, basically, I have not looked at the Kumu IO. I did go through Draw and Lucidchart. Lucidchart is not open source software, where Draw, you can at least use it in an open source way, which is a plus. But I still have to go through the Kumu one. I have not tried that one yet.
Which one's your favorite so far?
Only because everybody can get to it is the Draw.io one. They both Lucidchart and Draw.io will work as plugins, like in Google Docs and things like that. So they're both easy to access. They both have, I'll call it, decent libraries. There are some specific additional libraries I think I see in Lucidchart if you're doing certain kinds of, you know, drawings. But for basic, you know, charts and graphs and all that kind of stuff, business process flows, flow charts, those kind of things, Draw.io certainly works very well for that. And so does Lucidchart. They're both equal except for the licensing differences. So, but I will check out, I'll update this for the Kumu.io. I haven't tried that one yet. So that's worth taking a look at. Maybe it's open source as well.
Great, thank you. Great, thank you very much. Okay, so then the only other two topics on the wiki page left are just discussing the new member sign up. Share this with everyone you know to get them to join the group who would be interested. If you just send them a link to this page, it walks them through getting a Linux login, how to join each one of the different projects or working group calls, how to edit a wiki page to add work in, and just how to get involved in individual projects on our webpage. So this is a great resource for people to go to first, so get it out there so people join us. Does anybody have any suggestions how we can make this page more accessible or more welcoming?
Hi, Bobby.
Hi.
So permit me to be a little, critical. So this page, I've really spent some time looking at this page. If I were not a little bit technically inclined, I think I would be scared by the page, in the sense that there's a lot of, you know, technical stuff. So I honestly, I'm still trying to make the time to draw out a layout, which I will share with the group. An alternative layout, you know, that's probably, I think, will be more non-techie friendly. Okay.
Yeah, that would be appreciated. I know this page has been here for a while and it hasn't really generated much interest. So anything you can do to help would be so appreciated.
I'll get back to you on that.
Okay, thank you. And then the only other thing that I was working on, which leads into the presentation, is the meetup project. So again, I did that summer project where I worked through 6 checkpoints and we built a social impact project that we put in the Big Apps Blockchain Challenge last week. We were just an honorable mention because we were a social project, not an actual challenge area. So it was just nice being there and we had a lot of fun. So I'm just going to show you a little bit about what that was about. Yep, I got the wrong screen. Hold on just a second. Okay, how's that look? Okay, so this was October 3rd, which was Thursday of last week. Basically, what New York did was they asked teams, blockchain teams, to come together to help solve some of New York's problems. So the first thing they did, and it was really well organized, actually, they held an introductory meeting where they had all the different speakers from the agencies in New York that are asking for blockchain help, so to speak. So they all came and we went there and we had a great time learning about what they wanted. They had 3 challenge areas, which were identity, real estate, and energy. So our project didn't fit in any of them, but I'm just going to talk a little bit about the 3 challenge areas more in a public sector. I'm probably going to give this presentation on Friday to the public sector group as well. So you're kind of my practice. So for the first challenge area was identity, and everybody knows how important identity is and how blockchain is going to change the way we look at ourselves and how we share the information. So the New York City people wanted to address this. So they threw out some challenges. So the 2 offices that had a play in this were the Mayor's Office for Economic Opportunity and ID New York City. So basically the mayor's office just wants to reduce poverty and try to get design programs and deliver services to the poverty-stricken areas in the city and make sure that everybody's getting the benefits that they need. And that's really hard to manage for that office. Just like ID New York City, the mayor ran on a platform where everybody in New York City is going to have an ID card because they don't have IDs. And this woman from this agency came and basically said, you know, this might be better if we do this on a blockchain and make these digital IDs. I think she's having trouble getting these ID cards to people and having them hold on to them, but people don't lose their phones, that's for sure. So the first group that came to answer ID was One Smart Lab, and they had put some AI models in with biometric securities to analyze people's faces. And they did it in such a way where they attached algorithms, so they took speech patterns and made it so you couldn't hold a picture of your face. There's no way that anyone could falsely try to identify themselves with your face analysis that this company offers, so that everyone who can go to receive services can just to get the services. The second one was the My City ID, which was a Milligan partner solution. And I thought this one was really cool because it dealt with self-sovereign identity. And it talked actually about how to actually achieve it. And they called it the three C's. So you create your ID, you claim your I call them assertions, but your whatever you need to claim to show that you belong to, in this case, a program or a benefit that the city offers you. And then you control what agencies see, what information for you. So that was a little neat way for self-sovereign identity to fall into this basic model was for income housing.
So this doesn't exist though, right?
No, these are all prototypes and what they win at this big app. So each group had one winner and they won, I believe it was $10,000 towards their development goals. A lot of free New York Madison Avenue lawyers and people office services. And $100,000 in Google Cloud services or Amazon Cloud services.
So these are basically what this whole process, I guess, is just trying to fund startups. Because in some cases, like the one you just showed, there already are working solutions for that. So other governments have already set that up. You know, the example that you just showed me in production, right?
Yep.
So New York City is not looking to reuse existing solutions. They want to build their own, it looks like.
Basically, or there were, I believe at the end, there was some, the next company after New York Common is Uport. And I know that's a big identity company for Ethereum. And they had a solution.
Right. So there's already one running. The government of Alberta up in Canada has already got one that's now probably a year old that's working really well for all the residents. It gives you that self-sovereign ID already.
Yeah. I don't know if the community, you know, where they, how they would get that information. And I think this is like kind of their way of challenging people to bring that information to them.
Yeah, it's almost like they're trying to fund development without focusing on asking the question, what already exists that I could have used in a sense?
Yeah, no, they didn't ask that question at all, no.
No, I agree. So it's basically to try to get something local going in New York as a competing solution at some point, hopefully for them.
And I guess they figured, you know, they have these legacy systems that they have to work with. They're going to need some kind of specialized solution anyway.
Not really. No. All the identity solutions are going to be following what I call common architecture models. To your point, the only thing they're going to wind up needing to do is integrate them, which is different. You're right. The integration would be custom, as you suggest.
Yes.
But the identity models won't be. They'll be just standard off-the-shelf, you know, products, in effect, that already exist in many cases.
Yeah, but in many cases, like you're proving yourself to get a permit for building something, you have to prove you have that document.
Right. So that's where the customization comes in. As you say, the attestations that they have to go through, the claims, if you will, that part. And all you're pointing to is custom data and say, for this certification or this identity, these are the attestations, which is really a data mapping problem. It's not a product problem. Data mapping thing, for what it's worth, but
well, and this New York Commons solution, they identified city government that provide resources, and they gave a low-cost wallet, I guess, and then they put in by your geolocation for your wallet, they could find out where are services in a close proximity to you. So
right.
That automatically wind up in your wallet for you to look at and see if you wanted those services.
Yeah. So it's interesting to see governments go through this and not take a look at what already exists out there that does the same thing. It's interesting.
And so. Then the next one was UPort, which Portlandia for New York City, which basically is, you know, building an ecosystem, again, to share secure, private, and preserve information in a secure, private, and preserving way. The model was the mobile wallet where citizens control their IDs, and data sharing between individuals and organizations are done in a trustworthy way. That was the last one for identity. So that were just the four of them. And again, they were all things that we've heard. If you've been listening in on some of the presentations in the different special interest groups, yeah, these things are happening all over the place. And New York, I guess, isn't calling anyone up and asking them what they're doing. They're just trying to do it themselves.
Right. So a friend of mine actually on this slide has a company that already does commercial real estate management on blockchain with AI on quantum computers. And he's rolling that out for a major realtor right now. So that's, you know, it's weird that they're trying to build these things custom, which in the long run isn't going to make a lot of sense. In the short term, it's fine. I'm sure they have funding for it to pay people to do it. But in the long run, because they're not going to be mainstream, they're going to wind up in a sense having to redo these things in a couple of years when the more mainstream solutions that are already out there are the ones that they have to wind up mapping to at some point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so the real estate, the people involved were the New York Department of Buildings, Economic Development Corp again, and the Citywide Administration Services. So the Department of Buildings, their job was the safety of over 1 million buildings, construction sites in all the five boroughs. So that's construction codes, zoning regulations, any kind of dwelling laws, anything that needs to be enforced in real estate that the city owns. Right. And just thinking about that is a nightmare.
Yep.
Everything is siloed. Nothing is shared. That was just ridiculous when they were talking about that.
So you already did this. You already did this presentation, right?
No.
Oh, so, okay. So
This is, I was doing the presentation of what we were presenting.
Yes.
And now this was what actually won the comp or made it to
okay.
the top 10.
Okay. All right.
So cool. These were the winners of the Big Apps Challenge in the three challenge areas.
Yeah. So it's funny because 20 years ago I created something that was unique and I'd never heard of it before. You know what it was? It was the Reinvent the Wheel Award. And I used to hand it out to people that reinvented a solution that already existed. It was in production somewhere. And I could have nominated
a lot of them, that's for sure.
That's right. I had to, if I was attendee, I would have had to brought a lot of little wheels to hand out. So, cool.
And again, so this, the New York Development Corporation wants to make sure that they have a good model to include innovation and economic growth and businesses and diversity. So they need to make sure that businesses are growing in New York City in their real estate endeavors. And the same thing with the Citywide Asset Management Administration Services. They share administration services. So the recruiting, hiring, facilities management, all the paperwork and administration services they would like to see on a blockchain, which I think is a good idea. So the solutions that they came up with, the first one was called Strategic Generation, and that was on Fabric. Oh, I forgot the S there. And they basically just were doing management services so that there's no corruption in the cycle, so that everything is, you know, one version of the truth throughout the whole service project. And then the next one was Alpine, and they basically did workflow documents so that it lays over your legacy system so that you would scan in a document and it would be attached to your legacy system. So for instance, if it was a medical document that you owned on your hip replacement and your insurance company needed to see it, they could just grab that document and attach it onto their legacy system. And it's a basic controlled document management system on the blockchain that can attached to your legacy system. It was a neat idea. You can look up Alpine if you need more on that one. And then the last one was Argo and their Gray New Deal, which was using smart contracts to track maintenance and repairs of government assets. So basically they were measuring things that leaked, cracked, or had holes in them. And they were building a smart contract network on all the real estate that the city owned to alert them before tragedies happen on buildings that haven't been serviced in a while, or something that has maybe an air conditioning that's over 15 years over its warranty that needs to be replaced before something happens. Or, you know, maybe there's a heating system that used the wrong kind of piping and they need to know where it is everywhere in the system. They can track it that way. So that one was really interesting as well. So those were the real estate ones. And then the final ones, and I wish Saptarshi was on the call because he's working on an energy solution over in India with his company. But again, this was just the way to have New Yorkers increase the renewable energy. They want to reduce their greenhouse emissions 80% by 2050. So in order to do that, they want to work on the peer-to-peer trading of renewable energy model that is becoming so popular on the blockchain. So obviously the two offices, the first one was the office of, the Office of Sustainability. I'm trying to see, there we go. And that is working to make sure the air is clean, the streets are green, and that they produce zero waste and zero carbon for the millions of residents in New York. So that's quite a undertaking. So that's what the mayor's office for that wanted to do. And then the next one was the Energy Research and Development, and there promotes energy efficiency and renewable energy sources to improve the economy and in the environment in New York. This was a statewide agency, where the other ones were mostly citywide agencies. So again, the solutions that people came up with for this were Block Apps came up with a real-time blockchain ledger to monitor carbon emission forecasts, and then to build a relationship with the managers, the regulators, and providers to have role-based access control to the information. So again, just to keep track of how much each building is using and how to reduce that and make that renewable energy. Perpetual power chain. This one was a Ethereum-based model. Although some of these were Fabric, some of these were Ethereum, and I should have prefaced each one with what the solution was built on. But this powertrain is to curb energy consumption. The gentleman who presented this from Perpetual got up there and basically said, New Yorkers are competitive people, so let's play on that. So as your power score goes down, you earn power coins that you can use in the system for your energy consumption, which is a really neat model. It gets people working against each other, you know, just to, you know, how many power coins did you save this week? Or, you know, it was an interesting model to make people competitive. And then Omega Grid was the last one. And basically that's just reinventing, like you said, the wheel, putting the energy grid on a blockchain so you can measure and allot energy from a peer-to-peer local clients to local providers, which again, that solution's been around. So, those pictures weren't good, but this was our submission to the thing. We did the Giving Chain, which was the decentralized model for charity giving in your community. And it was a great day. We had a lot of fun. So that's basically what the blockchain challenge was about in New York City. We have 5 minutes left. Does anybody have any questions about the blockchain challenge?
Do you have a PDF of that up on the site?
No, I just finished it. I'll correct the spelling errors and I'll put it up there.
Sounds good. Thanks.
It'll be probably under meeting notes. So you could just click on the link under meeting notes.
Sure. Sounds good. Thanks.
Oh, no worries. Does anybody have any more questions? Nope. Okay, then we'll end the call for today. Thank you, everybody, for showing up, and I'll see you in 2 weeks.
Great. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.